I've been told that there's a Chinese curse that goes something like this. May you live in interesting times. And I wondered just why that would be considered a curse. And my reflection tells me that we're living in interesting times. And what I see in our collective life is tremendous upheaval in kind of an established and a kind of secure order of things. And there are tumultuous and uncontrollable forces loose at play in the world today. We can look at the societal and cultural forces, the religious and spiritual forces, the economic forces, political forces. There's just tremendous change happening. And the force of change in our communities and nationally and internationally is far greater than any one of us, and it moves us about. We are like dust motes in a whirlwind, and all of us get to experience the insecurity of that, and the instability of that, and the unknowingness of, well, how's it all going to shake out? And on a personal level, we all have already experienced plenty of pleasure in our life and pain. We've all experienced a lot of abundance in material and other resources, and we've all experienced a tremendous amount of loss. We've all experienced praise, and we've all experienced blame. We've all experienced a welcome recognition, and we all see and have felt the devastating effects of not living up to our expectations in others' eyes. Now, we all hope for the best. We all structure our lives to secure what we need in order to feel safe and secure, to live a life of abundance. And as much as possible, we try to avoid pain and loss and disrepute and all those unpleasant conditions in life. And each of us knows that. We see how much we struggle to ensure a good life for ourselves. And in spite of that, we're not always successful or able to do that. So we can see that even though we understand that this is what we do, and we understand and do the best we can, that does not insulate us nor inoculate us from experiencing suffering. Try as best as we can. And so we see that the understanding is not enough. In order to navigate the interesting times we live in, each of us will be benefited by developing contingency plans. And the contingency plans for surviving well in tumultuous times is the cultivation of what are known in the Pali or in the Buddhist teachings as the paramis. And these are qualities of mind which we cultivate through awareness practices that allow us to open to the full extent of life and respond from a place of understanding and patience and kindness and clarity, rather than react out of fear and grief and insatiable need. So these forces of stability in our life, or the forces that allow us a sense of well-being, even in times of stress and difficulty, are the forces that purify the mind of the defilements. When the mind is purified of, and this is momentarily or temporarily or on a more enduring basis, when the mind is purified of greed, attachment, clinging, along with aversion of all forms and confusion or delusion, then we have within us the resources to accept that this is the way it is and to respond effectively. So tonight, or this afternoon, I want to speak about these qualities of mind which support us. Take a moment and think about someone in your life, either personal acquaintance or a historical person that you value or honor, appreciate. What makes that person someone that you venerate or value or honor in your life? You know, historically, we can look at Martin Luther King and recognize that he had some fierce honesty in his mind. He was just willing to see the truth, even if it killed him, and to say, this is the way it is. Or now we have Aung San Suu Kyi in Burma, who's willing to single-handedly, with kind of suppressed support, confront the military junta in Burma. We have spiritual being Gandhi, who faced overwhelming forces. Or we have Mother Teresa, whose compassion in the face of the need in India was just phenomenal. And when we look at these people, and we all have individuals in our life that are less well known that we value, we see that each of them has what collectively we would say are the best of human qualities. Truthful, honest, a lot of integrity, courage, understanding, patience, energy, compassion. These are the qualities that appear in the mind when the mind is free of aversion, free of confusion, free of attachment. So we could say that when the mind is awake, as the Buddha was the awakened one, and the mind is purified of greed, hatred, and delusion, or in all their forms, then we could say that these are the qualities that appear. When I say that the Buddha is called the awakened one and was free of greed, hatred, and delusion, and that these paramis, or these qualities of mind, were ever-present or ascendant in his mind, I mean that the qualities of generosity, truthfulness, energy, patience, balance of mind, loving-kindness, renunciation, determination, resoluteness, these qualities become the default setting of the mind. They're the first response in the mind to challenging situations. Well, I guess we can see that while we may appreciate this in others, we may not yet have manifested it in our own life, because try as I might, I cannot honestly say that patience is my first responder in trying situations. But I see the potential. And this is an important piece, to understand that each one of us has the potential to be generous, to be patient, to be understanding, to be truthful. And these qualities are not particularly Buddhist. They're not particularly religious, not particularly spiritual. They're certainly not esoteric. They're very ordinary human qualities that we all recognize and we all experience at one time or another, and maybe a lot. So all I'm doing is pointing out that we have within us already budding possibilities of nobility in our life. And we have the potential, and recognizing that and valuing it is a large part of our practice. Unbeknownst to you, this is what you've been doing for the last 4 or 5 days, is developing these qualities of patience, energy, understanding, non-reactivity, truthfulness with yourself and others, renunciation, letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go. And we don't need to talk about them, but through the practice of awareness, all of these qualities are being developed. Now that we make known these qualities and learn the skills of working with them, we can see that it takes practice. It takes practice to choose to be patient. It takes practice to choose to be non-reactive or to be more balanced in our response. It takes practice to recognize opportunities for being generous. And it takes practice because our conditioning, our family conditioning, our societal conditioning, our cultural conditioning, does not always value these qualities. But we can see also, to the extent that we develop them in our life, they offer us a foundation for a sense of well-being. Well-being is an inner feeling that is not overcome or undermined by challenging and difficult situations. Even when things are unpleasant, a feeling of well-being can still coexist in the mind. What does it take once we recognize the potential of these qualities in our heart? What does it take to make these qualities a personal choice? Well, one is it takes some reflection. We need to reflect carefully on, and maybe intelligently, on how to bring these qualities into our life. Like you, my life has a trajectory and a momentum that is not susceptible to easy moving. It's like a ship going full bore, and you don't just say, yeah, I'd like to do that, and head off into a more generous, a more compassionate, a more wise, a more patient lifestyle. But it takes reminding myself that it can be it is an option. these qualities of mind are an option. But we need to notice what gets in the way of these qualities. And this is the practice that we're doing here, is bringing awareness to the way things are, the way it is, the way we are, the way we respond, the way we react, the way we see things, the way we understand or misunderstand, the way it is for us. And in that, we can see our limitations. We can see when we're not careful with what we say and what we do. We can see when the mind gets wound up in some obsession that we can't get out of. We see when we misunderstand or don't believe or have a doubt. And this is our current limitation. But when you bring awareness to a current limitation and value to a potential within, the missing link is choice, is practice, is making, arousing the intention and the aspiration to move our life in that direction. When we do that, we are going to have to confront our conditioning. And all of us have a history of family conditioning, cultural conditioning, which allows us to suffer. And the choice of making the paramis, the default setting of your mind, is to confront that suffering, which is, again, exactly what we're doing. You know, in the Buddha's formulation of the Four Noble Truths, the first noble truth is the truth of dukkha, suffering, pain, stress, insecurity, instability, oppressiveness. And it is said that the first noble truth is to be investigated, is to be discovered. And as much as we've all suffered in our life, in a way we haven't suffered intelligently, meaning we haven't paid attention to it. We haven't kind of taken it in, acknowledged the extent of it, and seen how it comes about, how it happens, why we suffer. And this is what mindfulness practice reveals. You know, we learn how we suffer and to the extent of our suffering. And the response to that in every situation is let go. Let go. Let go. Let go. Let go of, you know, behaviors and thoughts and opinions and judgments and unfulfillable needs and greeds. And we could say that all of the paramis are practices of letting go. I like to point out that, and I'll go through the list, actually, that the paramis look like qualities that we have to generate in our life. But actually, they're equally arousable, if you will, or they're equally available if we let go of what gets in their way. So generosity, well, that's pretty clear. Generosity is letting go of greed and attachment. And it can be greed and attachment and identification with things, beliefs, people, obsessions, and maybe most importantly, a sense of self. Letting go of, as Gil spoke about, you see, this sense of me, this selfing that we get, that we generate and get so attached to, that doesn't last that long. You know, conditions change and our sense of ourself changes. Morality or living an ethical life is letting go of obsessively acting out our conditioning of greed, hatred, and aversion. Renunciation is all forms of letting go. Wisdom, another parami, is letting go of delusion, letting go of confusion. And when I turned 48, I realized it was letting go of naivete. Letting go of this mistaken attachment that I don't know what's going on. You know what? We know what's going on. Cut to the chase. We know what this life's about. And somehow, we're kind of willing to play along with being invisible, being anonymous, being, I didn't know. We know what we're doing to make our life the way it is. And wisdom is the courage to acknowledge that and then to act on what we know. Energy, another parami, is the letting go of laziness, letting go of sloth, letting go of procrastination. Anybody here procrastinate? Why do we procrastinate? And I know we all do. I mean, I'm guessing we all have some capacity to procrastinate. Why? I have found in my life that the dread I feel at doing something, or the sense of oppressiveness, oh, I got to do something, is much worse than actually just doing it. Over and over I get this lesson, but I haven't learned it well enough yet. Patience is letting go of impatience, of course, but I find that patience is letting go of insisting on having things done my way. Truthfulness is letting go of deception, delusion. Resoluteness, not a quality that is identified that much in practice or in our life, secular life even, is letting go of dissipation. Letting go of the mind just being dissipated. Just kind of scattered to the four corners of possibilities. At some point we have to realize that all those futures we've imagined for ourselves, they're not going to happen. Not the fearful ones, not the joyful ones. They're not going to happen. And rather than kind of mindlessly pursuing all these things that are beyond reach, dissipating our energy in the pursuit of them, let it go. Let go of that dissipation and bring the mind to a resolute path of awakening through whatever your choice is, whatever your choice of practice is. Loving kindness, of course, is letting go of aversion, hatred, judgment. Equanimity, the tenth or the last of the paramis, is not only letting go of reactivity, it's letting go of dramatizing natural events, natural occurrences. So much of our suffering in life is making a big drama about a pretty ordinary thing. We all live this human life. We all have these very human experiences, and loss and grief and sorrow and joy and pride and disappointment and whatnot. We don't need to compound it with dramaism. This is pretty ordinary. But it takes, certainly in our culture, that cultivates, inflames, encourages reactivity, whether it's political reactivity or social reactivity, just, opinionatedness is valued in our culture. This is not equanimity. This is not a balanced mind. And so, if we undertake the commitment to raise the paramis in our mind, we are going to have to confront our cultural conditioning and see that, while we might say we value truthfulness, our culture as a whole does not. We live in a culture that encourages, condones, allows, and makes a hell of a lot of money off deception. We participate in that. What is a commitment to the truth going to do to you? How are you going to fulfill that? Well, we're going to have to look at all of this deception in our life. that's coming at us and that we're putting out. Well, this is why it's difficult. This is why it's challenging to purify the mind of attachment, aversion, and delusion. But through this intelligent reflection on these qualities of mind and what it would mean to advance them in our life, we can reach a conclusion that it is of value, and it is a choice, and it is a decision that we make to aspire towards fulfilling these qualities in our life. I like the recognition that all of the paramis are practices of letting go, because it doesn't require selfing, as Gil was speaking about, you see, to become a generous person, to become a loving person, to become a patient person. Because we can get attached and identified with those qualities in an unhealthy way also. But rather, we can practice the letting go of attachment, letting go of aversion, letting go of confusion, delusion, and the qualities of the paramis will awaken in our mind just as well. But it takes, you know, as I said, manifesting the paramis in practice in our daily life. Well, let me just ask, how many of you commute to work? Do you ever have an opportunity to practice patience in commuting to work? Every day, we all have the opportunity to practice patience. Every day, we all have the opportunity to be generous in our time or our energy or our resources. Every day, we all have the opportunity to be opinionated or more balanced in our reaction or response to someone or to the news. Every day, we have the opportunity. In this way, we say the paramis are everyday practices. In Burma, the understanding is that we practice the paramis in our life, in our family life, in our social life, in our civic life, and they're not practices that you have to do on the cushion. They're practices that you do at the kitchen sink while driving, at work, or around the water cooler. We need to remember them. We need to remember that these are possibilities. And in Burma, the understanding is that the paramis are the foundation upon which liberating insight rests. So, for 10 months of the year, they do their parami practice. 2 months of the year, they go to an intensive retreat and see what the depth of their wisdom is from that. You know? And they just get a check on what's their level of renunciation, what's their level of understanding. And then they go back and do another 10 months of parami practice, go to the monastery and do a two-month retreat and check it out again. And, well, I know this sounds a little bit of a reach, but a lifetime of that, and you'll see progress. You don't have to wait for a lifetime, of course, but... I think it would be better if we considered practice or liberation more of a marathon than a sprint. Anything that you can get in a weekend, you can lose in a weekend. Anything that you can get in a week, you can lose in a week. So if you want these qualities to be with you and available when the crunch comes, whatever the crunch is going to be for you, and it might not be until you die, or it might not be until you retire, or it might not be until you get divorced, or until you get married, or whatever. You know, the crunch comes periodically in life. Not knowing when that'll be, well, if we start now and keep practicing, then maybe we'll we'll have the requisite qualities of mind when needed. It's clear that the paramis are not a religious practice and not a spiritual practice. As I said, they're not even particularly Buddhist, but they are practices. It's something that we can aspire to if we remember, and that we can move to fulfill or to activate in our life. Now, when I use the word parami, I'm not a Pali scholar, so I might have to check this out with Gil after the talk, but parami means something like perfection, and generally they're referred to as the forces of purity in our mind. Now, all of us are, at different times, generous, truthful, loving, patient. But when I talk about these practices being parami practices, there's a difference. Just being generous is not a parami practice. What makes it a parami practice is when these qualities are developed for the benefit of oneself and all beings' liberation. When that's the motivation, when that's the, may this act of generosity support the liberation of all beings, support their liberation from suffering. May this act of truthfulness somehow contribute to the end of suffering for all beings. May this act of loving kindness somehow contribute to the liberation of all beings. Because then, that aspiration or that qualification undermines the tendency to reinforce yourself. I'm doing this for me. I'm being generous because it's good for me. I'm being truthful because it's all about me. I'm becoming a spiritual athlete. You know? That's another obstacle to practice. Ultimately, the goal of our practice is understanding these paramis in our life. And while letting go is the tool for liberation, it is understanding which does the work. And when I say the work and the result of the work is happiness and a sense of well-being. But as you probably already know, even though we may value the paramis as qualities in our life, and we may undertake them as a practice, it's not always apparent that practicing truthfulness is going to lead to happiness. It's not always apparent that practicing patience is going to lead to your happiness. And so, as we practice, we're going to be confronted with our own doubt, our own lack of resolve, our own questioning about how to practice these qualities in a way that brings both immediate and long-range happiness. That's why we have to be mindful, so that we can see the effect of our practice on ourselves and on others, both in the moment of practice and over the course of time. Through careful attention over a period of time, we will see, we will make mistakes. We will try as best we can, and nevertheless, we'll still make mistakes. But it's when we're willing to try and we're willing to acknowledge, oh, this was a mistake, or this was not a skillful way of practicing this parami, that we can then refine our understanding and try again. There are plenty of opportunities for trying again. And in that refinement of understanding, we eventually purify the mind of the defilements. So it is through awakening to the possibility, recognizing our potential of these qualities within, and making them a personal choice, aspiring to fulfill them in our life, and then following through with the mindfulness practice, similar to what we're doing here, both in intensive situations on a daily basis and, well, as I mentioned, for the rest of our life. There comes a time in one's Dharma path where the Dharma or the commitment to the way things are becomes less of a practice, something that you do for an hour a day or a retreat a year. It becomes less of a practice and it becomes more of a way of life. And for each of us, we have to hold our commitment and hold our aspiration and continue to make that intentional effort until the momentum in the mind reaches that turning point. Because at some point, and it's not an immediate point, but you feel that the commitment, the internal commitment to the truth is greater than the drag of your conditioning. Doesn't mean it's always easy, but at least you see that your commitment to the truth and to acknowledging the way things are is greater than the confusion and delusion that we've lived with for so long. And this is what I call when we actually start to live a Dharma lifestyle. A retreat like this is not a lifestyle that any of us are going to live for long. You know, we can do it for a week, or some of you might go for a two-week retreat, or, you know, if you really graduate to the big time, go for a three-month retreat, or if you're a total fanatic, you can go join the monastery for a year or two or five. But nevertheless, you still have to kind of come out of the intensity and, well, live an ordinary life. Ordinary, or maybe I should say extraordinary life, when the momentum of your commitment to the Dharma becomes what carries you through life, rather than the practice that you do on your cushion for an hour a day. In closing, I'd like to just read a couple of lines about a couple of the paramis. Because they're all practices of letting go, Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche says about letting go, or the act of renunciation: renunciation implies the strong wish to free oneself not only from life's immediate sorrows, but from the seemingly unending cycle of conditioned existence. And with this renunciation comes a heartfelt weariness and disillusionment with the endless quest for gratification, approval, profit, and status. And I think all of us have, at one time or another, felt disillusioned with the cultural imperative to seek gratification, approval, profit, and status, and would just as soon step off the treadmill. That sense, even if we don't know how to fulfill it, is the seed of renunciation. It's a seed of letting go. And when you feel that, you want to nurture that. Not just make yourself miserable that you can't step off the treadmill, but nurture that appreciation of renunciation, we do not have a lot of role models in our culture of for renunciation. And so we have to find them within ourselves and nurture them. And secondly, as we practice the Dharma and the Paramis, we gradually grow in understanding. And Sayadaw Utejaniya says of this growth of wisdom, that wisdom inclines towards the good, but is not attached to it. It shies away from what is not good, but it has no aversion to it. Wisdom recognizes the difference between skillful and unskillful, and it clearly prefers the skillful. So this is our path. Whether we're in intensive practice here, or we're on our way to work, or we're doing the dishes, or changing the diapers, this is our work to see what's skillful, what's unskillful, and to follow the path of the skillful. So let's sit for a moment with the words. Quiet down. Buddha said, if by renouncing a lesser happiness one attains to a happiness that is greater, the wise will pursue that happiness which is greater. Listening to the Dhamma.
Sadhu, sadhu.